Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
For the last time in 2017, Billboard Sharpie Podcast. I'm Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
Wow, and I'm, I guess, for the final time in this great year of ours, I'm Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
We taped this one recently, and partly running this, there's a new book out that could make a great gift. You're still doing the holiday shopping. A book by our own Fred Bronson, who was did the Sharpie column for several years in the 90s into the 2000s, written a lot of books over the years, probably most famously the Billboard Book of Number One Hits, which if you're a chart fan, you probably read every entry of the 1,000 plus number one hits over the years.
I mean, that is a labor of love and research. I mean, there's so many artists and that Fred talked to in particular about their songs. I mean, producers, managers. I mean, it's not just a it's not just a research collection of facts, but I mean, to interview all these people, to set all of that up, I mean, that really is an A-plus effort on its own. So if you have not ever checked that book out, if you didn't know it existed, I'm sure, I mean, there's plenty of copies at the library, at the bookstore, you know, just grab one, flip through it, buy it. I mean, there's nothing like it out there, truly.
And Fred's been on the podcast before. He's talked about the book. We had him on in earlier this year, too, when we had Kelly Clarkson on. He's a big American Idol fan. He's contributed to American Idol. So Fred spent a lot of the year, a lot of last year, interviewing the Jacksons about their legacy, which dates back to Diana Ross presenting them, discovering them, and Berry Gordy back in the late 60s. And yeah, you look back.
Even the days before that, working out in Gary, Indiana, before right. They were even, the Motown heavyweights.
So who would tell that story better than someone who's lived through it all? So Jackie Jackson, we're really honored to have Fred and Jackie both on the phone together talking about what it was like, obviously, putting the book together, but Jackie reliving 50-plus years of a life that so few people, who's had a life like that in the spotlight for just becoming a part of music history for a half century. So that's what this week's Billboard Sharpie podcast is. Jackie Jackson, memories of the Jacksons, the Jackson 5, Michael Jackson going solo.
And even we get some mentions of Janet in there as well. Yeah. And, I mean, truly like the full family affair.
Right. And we'll say there's an emotional moment coming up where Jackie starts talking about Michael Jackson, and you'll hear that, if nothing else, you can hear the bonds that this family has had, and you take away just the spotlight that they've had. I think when you listen, you get a real sense. I think I got this from when we talked to Jackie that, at the core of it all, they're just a family. It goes back to family first, and they just happen to be one of maybe the most famous musical family of all time.
Well, and I guess kind of almost to counter that point, I think the spotlight, when you leave it on, I mean, the spotlight to me seems like they brought them closer together. I mean, you see so many families who, the spotlight, brings up disputes and arguments, and we don't talk to each other, and, disagreements. And it seems like, throughout all this, you rarely, hear about any sort of Jackson feud or long lasting bitterness. I mean, at the end of the day, they're all, yes, very famous, rich, this and that. But yeah, I mean, that's one element, the family element, that has kept them going forever.
Yeah, he mentions he mentions at the end of the podcast that with family reunions now, it's just a big party. It's a big love.
Yeah, I mean, between, you know, not only just the siblings that we all know, but I mean nieces and nephews and grandkids, and I mean, and both their parents are still alive as well. So I mean, you know, it's a real huge family affair, multi-generational. That's just so cool.
And the Jacksons are still performing. They just had a 50th anniversary tour in England. So they're still continuing that legacy, again, the title of the book that Fred Bronson wrote with Jackie Jackson and the Jacksons. So, again, just really excited to have Fred Bronson and Jackie Jackson of the Jacksons as our special guests on the last Billboard Charpie podcast of 2017. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Jackie Jackson and Fred Bronson, author of the new book, The Jackson's Legacy. Thank you both so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here.
All right, so what's it like for both of you doing a book that really just turns into this is your life? You know, Jackie, you're letting Fred grill you about every detail. Do you learn things about yourself that maybe you never realized before when you do a retrospective like this? And Fred, what was it like being the person doing all the grilling?
After hearing about the book, the Motown book, and the Rolling Stones book, and things that Fred has done in the past, and I said, this is the guy we want to use to do the Jackson's book. And he came out to the house, and we sat down for about 6 days, going over all kind of archives and storage and stuff like that, pulling everything out of my storage. And it was a lot of hard work, you know. It was a lot of fun because I realized I had things that in stores that I forgot about, that I never knew about, and just refreshing my memory on some of those items I had in storage, it brought a lot of great tears to my eyes and a lot of joy of all the things that I've learned along the way with friends and all the photos we've taken along the way. It was just great to see everything again, because sometimes you put things away and you don't realize you have it until you see it again, you know. So it was great working with Fred. He's easy to work with, and we did a lot of great interviews. Like, some of them were like long hours, but you know, it was worth it. It's a great book.
Thank you, Jackie. I had a great time. I mean, you know, I had actually never met Jackie before, or Marlon, or Tito. So this was my first time sitting down with you know, all of them separately, and they were all great. They're not all, you know, Jackie, you and Marlon and Tito are. You all have your own personalities, obviously, but I found that all three of you had a great humility and were very open to talk about anything I asked. So in those terms, they were very easy interviews to do. It just was a conversation, and it flowed. And we went from childhood up to today, so we covered a lot of ground.
I know you've said before, Fred, on other books you've worked on, it can be months and years, and then it finally comes out. And you maybe think that day was never going to come, but for both of you, you've got the book in front of you. It's such a great-looking product, with, as you said, Jackie, so many pictures, so many images, mementos, things that you think, wow, how did they find that over these years? Looking at the book now, what do you both think of it?
Well, this was a fantastic book, and I know it was fantastic because I showed this to some of my friends, and they are very tough critics, and they just loved the book. They said, oh, man, this is incredible. And I'm just happy to hear that they were telling me that about the book was so great. You know, they're very tough critics. One of them is John McClain from Motown. He's been with us for years. He's like our seventh brother in the family. He saw the book. He just thought it was just unbelievable. He keep raising for it. So I gave him one of mine already. Because he wanted one so bad. So he just loved it. He said, man, this is fantastic. I've never seen a book like this before. That's what he told me. I said, wow, it's a great book.
I gotta agree. And not because of me, but the art direction you know, the publisher does all that. I don't lay out the book, and it's really a beautiful book. It also weighs a lot. Gary, you've got your copy there, right? But yeah, you could. It's heavy,
thick, yeah.
A little hefty. You mentioned, you know, taking a year or so to write a book. This time, the publisher, they already had a publication date when they asked me to write it. And they said, we need you to do it in 2 months. And I said, that is impossible. I cannot write a book in two. And that included doing the interviews, you know, which took a whole month of traveling around the country, right? And but somehow, I won't say I did it in two months, but the book text I finished in 2.5 months, and then there's over a thousand photos, so I had to write the captions, and the captions took another 6 weeks to write, because that required a lot of research. But it got done way more quickly than any book I've ever written.
As much of a historian as you are, Fred, about music, you must have learned a lot that even you didn't know as you went through this whole process.
I did. I mean, I lived through, you know, the beginnings of the Jackson Five and their career. And in fact, I told Jackie when I did the interview, I saw them in the summer of 1969. The Supremes did a show at the Forum in Inglewood, California, and the surprise guests were the Jackson Five. Nobody had ever seen them, you know, the public had never seen them before. And so I was in the audience and saw their, you know, like a 20-minute set that they did in the middle of a Diana Ross and the Supreme show. So I was there from the beginning. So I felt like I knew a lot going in, but you're right, I learned a lot more just by talking with Jackie and Marlon and Tito about their lives that I didn't know, and it's all in the book.
Jackie, take us back to the very beginning. This is in the book. The house was so musical that you grew up in, and your dad was tough. And as tough as he was, it was tough love, because it was not the easiest town you grew up in. Gary, Indiana, there were gangs, and your mom was more the softy. But you look back and you appreciate that he instilled that work ethic in you, and he was musical. He was playing in bands. So it sounds like it was a musical house growing up. What are the earliest origins of the Jackson Fives, the Jacksons,
yeah,
earliest beginning?
It was a tiny house in Gary, Indiana, a two-bedroom house. With a lot of love, and we did music and played a lot of baseball. That's what we did. Like we played, because we had baseball shows right behind our house. We played a lot of baseball. When we weren't playing baseball, we were doing music. And my father would rehearse us, and he brought us instruments, and we had shows and concerts, but not real concerts, but like shows around the neighborhood. And we would rehearse every day, and all the kids would come around and peek in the windows, and we had a little audience. So we're an audience. They would watch us perform, and we performed for our neighbors around the neighborhood. And my father took it from there and bought us instruments and told us that if you want to be great one day, you just got to be, you got to rehearse and be good at it. And that's what we tried to do. And plus, that on top of that, you know, it was tough love, because he was a tough father, you know. And the reason why he was tough like that, because there were gangs around the neighborhood. He just didn't want us to join any of those gangs. So he kept us away from the gangs. When he would go to work, he would make us move a pile of bricks from one end of the yard over to the other end. And he kept us busy. And I said, Dad, we finished. He said, now move them back from there to the next place now. He kept us moving bricks all day long, every day. There's a reason why he did that, though. I said, it was tough love, but I see the reason why now. He was a great dad. He really was. He was there for us. He had 9 kids. Most guys back in those days, they leave. They don't stay with the children. My father was there, and he worked hard. He had several jobs, and he was there to raise all 9 kids.
So the first the group consists of you, Jackie, Tito, and Jermaine, and
yeah,
then
Jackson 3 before it was the Jackson 5.
The Jackson 3. How did little Michael and Marlon get in?
Well, because they were always crying and whining about they wanted to be in the group. And Michael would grab these Quaker oatmeal boxes. You know, the Quaker oatmeal boxes, he would use those like bongo. And he would play those in front of our face while we were, you know, doing our set. And we said, God, this guy can play these Quaker oatmeal boxes, you know. And we put him in the group, you know. And all of a sudden, he started doing this James Brown type of dance. He was doing the James Brown, him and Marlon both. And we said, well, wait a minute. I think we got something here. These little guys can dance and everything. So we put him in the group, and people just loved him, you know. He was doing the James Brown, and Marlon's doing the James Brown, spinning and doing splits on the floor. And it was very exciting. I mean, something that we can use in our band. And we started doing talent shows around town in Gary, Indiana. And guys like Earth, Wind, Fire was on the show, and different artists like that, you know. And we would always win first prize, you know. We win contests all the time and played a lot of weddings around the neighborhood. And we just kept going from there, you know.
I don't think I've ever heard that Quaker oatmeal is what's responsible for giving us Michael Jackson. So from there, so obviously there's talent. It's clear that there's talent from neighborhood shows and local shows. At that point, the audition for Motown, it's actually kind of funny how it started with support from Gladys Knight, which you'd think would be an incredible catalyst for anyone's career. But even though Gladys took an interest in you, it wasn't really her who wound up making you guys get signed to Motown.
Yeah, we were performing for Mayor Hatchett and Mayor Richard Hatchett. That was the mayor at the time in Gary, Indiana. And sometimes, you know, his guests would be artists like Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers and Gladys Knight and the Pips. And we were on the show and we performed. She saw us and she went back and told Barry Gordy, it's this little group in Gary, Indiana that's really hot, you know, and all of a sudden, Bobby Taylor was on the show the next year, and he went back and said the same thing to Barry Gordy. And all of a sudden, they started paying attention to us. You know, Motown was coming our way. You know, it was very exciting. And so all of a sudden, they signed us. Motown signed us. Barry Gordy signed us. And we would tell people in our neighborhood that we were signed to Motown. They said, oh, you guys are not with Motown. You're not signed. Said, yes, we signed with Motown. We were with Motown for a whole year before anything came out, you know. And all the neighbors didn't believe it quite until we came out with the first record, and they really believed it then.
And so, of course, when you guys get signed to Motown and they start grooming you, one of the things that you note, especially in the book, is that you guys moved into Diana Ross's house for a bit as you were starting the career. Like, what was that like living with Diana, who, I mean, was the diva of divas at the time?
She pretty much took us her on her wing. Despite, like I said before, Gladys was the one who discovered us and Bobby Taylor. But since Diana Ross was Barry Gordy's biggest star, you know, she pretty much introduced us to the world. She did. And we lived with her in her home, and it was just incredible. And we would paint fights in her home. Draw painting, really, real paint fights inside of her home. I wouldn't let no one do that to my home. Like,
you guys just throw paint around that? That's crazy.
Absolutely. We did all kind of crazy things with her in the house. She loved it. We did it.
And Marla noted the house was white, which I think makes it that much, you know, I mean,
the house was white. Absolutely.
And I guess it ended up red and blue and green and everything else.
It's probably good artwork, but that room wall's worth a lot of money today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, so you moved to Hollywood. You're living with Diana Ross. So you're given new producers of the Corporation who wrote "I Want You Back." What did you think of that song the first time you heard it?
That was amazing. When I first heard the song, I knew it was a hit right away because it was a glimpse of the piano starting. And one thing about Barry Gordy, he always taught us that you know, to get people's attention in any song, you got to get their attention right away. The first thing you hear, you got to grab their attention. If you don't, they're going to go to the next record. So when I heard that gliss on the "Once You're Back," and that bass line, I knew right away it was going to be a hit record for us. I knew right away. And we had so much fun recording the song with Deke Richards, Harry George, Freddie Perren, and all the wonderful producers that worked with us along the way. It was just amazing, amazing people. When I first heard the song, I heard it on the radio. Let me tell you, when I first heard the song, and after hearing the song so many times inside the recording studio, you know, mixing it and hearing it over and over again and recording it, but once you hear it on the radio, it's a different type of vibe. I heard it on the radio for the first time. I pulled over on the side of the road and I started screaming because it sounds so great. I just knew it was going to be a hit. I just knew it was a hit the way it sounded on the radio. And I turned to the next station. It was playing on that station. It was playing on that station. Just back to back to back. It was playing all over the radio stations, all over. And I knew right then it was going to be a hit. I knew right then.
And I have to set this one up since we are at Billboard. So the song is a Billboard Hot 100 number one. What did you do when you found out the song was number one?
Well, we jumped for joy, all the brothers, and we got together. We just couldn't believe it. And matter of fact, we still have some little billboards today, you know. And it was amazing to see your record go number one, because we would always fall in the charts all the time, looking at other artists, you know, going number one. That was our goal in life, is to have a number one record, and we did. We had.
What was that like? Like, you know, it's one thing to have a number one song, but then you had four in a row. How did that change your life?
Well, it changed my whole life in many ways, because after having four number one records in a row, we couldn't go anywhere. And we realized that it was like pandemonium wherever we went. It was like pandemonium, and pretty much. At first, I didn't like that, you know, because I like to go places and go just be part of everyday life, or, you know, be regular, you know, Joe. But after having four number one records, that's not the case. I found out. That's not the case, you know. And we were doing concerts, and it was like every win is like pandemonium, and it was great. And we loved performing, and we had a lot of sellout concerts all around the whole globe. Just unbelievable, unbelievable career that we've had. And I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. Yeah, it was great.
And it happened so fast. I mean, you had your four number ones within just a few months. It was like you went from being unknown to being the biggest group in America in a very short time.
Yeah, and pretty much the biggest group, you know, all over the world at that particular moment, because
sure,
the four numbers were big all over the world, and traveling over to England for the first time and all over Europe, it was just amazing. Because I remember flying into London at that particular time. 5 o'clock in the morning, the pilot let us know there was 10,000 screaming kids sleeping in the airport. And they were taxiing, you know, and it was screaming. I was watching the kids just running all over everywhere, and 10,000 kids sleeping in sleeping bags outside, waiting for our arrival. I had no idea it was going to turn like that, you know.
Yeah, just
amazing. Yeah.
Maybe my favorite quote in the book is, one minute I was in school studying British history. The next thing I know, the Queen is asking us to come and perform.
Yes, that was amazing. Of course, after being in school and learning all about the Queen and and everything about that. You see all the red carpet and the horses and the carriages and the things like that. And all of a sudden, we performed for the Queen. She called us to perform. Yeah, and she told us that she had all of our records, and I couldn't believe it. She had all of our records. She listened to it all the time.
The Queen is a Jackson 5 fan.
I was saying, we need to go find her 45 collection.
Break into the Jackson 5 music, you know.
Nowadays, we all look back at those four number ones in particular as, I mean, just all four of them, all iconic, well-known songs. But as you note in the book, the second number one, which it's kind of crazy to me to think that people didn't like this, but you said you didn't like ABC when you first heard it. What was wrong with ABC iteration?
I didn't like it at first because I thought it was too bubblegum kitty land, ABC, you're learning your ABCs and... But, you know, it just grew on me. So it grew on me as time went on. It grew on me, a song, and people loved it all over the world. And a lot of kids today learn their ABCs by playing ABC. You know, my boys, I get twin boys that are 3 years old. They'll be 4 years old in December. And they sing it. They know the songs themselves and, you know, all the songs. It's just amazing to see how they love the music themselves, you know. But, and it's one of those iconic songs, ABC, 1, 2, 3, you know, Do, Re, Mi. Everybody, all the kids love it, you know, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, myself even, you know, growing up, like, I remember being 6 and 7, we were out in the front yard, and maybe the older cousins knew it, and especially, you know, like, just in a black community, like, I didn't even, it's one of those songs that becomes so ingrained sort of in black youth culture that I didn't even realize it was, you know, a real legit pop song, right? That was a hit. I just thought it was, you know, like almost like a nursery rhyme. Like, you learn it so early, so easy.
Yeah, it was one of those type of songs. Like you say, it was like a nursery rhyme type of song.
You know, one of the things that I always find really interesting, Jackie, is that you have a perspective that it's just so few people in the world do. The experiences you've had talking about the Queen and 10,000 fans waiting for you. Is it, when you look back, is it all a blur? Do some things stand out? How do you look back at all these experiences? You know, I'm just blessed that all this happened, or every once in a while certain details pop back up in your head?
We did so much back in the day because that was all part of when you have stuff like that, you know, everybody wants to see you and say hello, and you pretty much perform all over the world. And it's been some very fantastic moments that we've shared, my brothers and I, over the years. And I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world. All the tours and all the great stadium days that we did around the world and arena days as well. And It was just a fantastic ride, you know. It really was. I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world, you know. And today, and because we had so many hits, you know, we tour today and make a living off things like that, you know, off tours that we do even today, you know, around the world. You know, we played Glastonbury last year. I think about maybe 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Right.
And it was like over 200,000 people there, just going crazy, who just love the music. And it was just amazing. See how many people there was out there. It was amazing. I never played in front of that many people before, 200 some thousand people.
Jackie, how did life change the more you guys became established? You talk about it sort of was almost overnight or over a few months. But other groups, if they have this kind of success so quickly and then everything gets overwhelming, they can always break up. Things get too tense. I mean, you could too, but you're still family at the end of the day. So what was the family dynamic of being in the band? Because you never really could get away from each other, ultimately, if things ever got really intense.
Well, you know, we worked at a very, very young age. We were very, very young. And it was something that we really wanted to do ourselves, because we was laying in the bed and looking at the ceiling and say, are we ever going to make it? We say that to ourselves all the time. And yeah, I was just telling us, just keep plugging, just stay with it, you know, just work hard and just hone your craft. You know, he used to tell us that all the time. That's what we did. We stayed at it all the time. And sometimes when you get that break, you got to be ready. And we got that break, and we were ready. And that's how we got signed. And things happened that way. And then what you do, you build from there with a great career. And plus, it's not just that. You have to have wonderful people working with you, around you. And Barry Gordy had a great staff at Motown, great writers, great producers at that particular time, because they wrote the songs at that particular time. And we understood that we represented Motown, the company, when we were out there. So So we were on top of things, and we did what we wanted to do, and we went traded for nothing in the world.
So the book, The Jacksons' Legacy, by the Jacksons with Fred Bronson, Jackie Jackson, and Fred, our guests here on the podcast, kind of breaks up your career into different eras, and you get into a chapter, a section called The Epic Years. You talk about Jackie and other people in the book, how as great as that start was at Motown, things changed. Things were changing in the band. Jermaine leaves, Randy joins, you become the Jacksons instead of technically the Jackson 5. Michael is emerging as a solo star. Was it at that point just you're taking things as they come, or do you remember it as being sort of a tumultuous time?
Yeah, I remember it because at that particular time we were getting older, and adolescence and stages, you know, fall into play, and your voice starts changing, and you know, you're growing up to be a young man. And at that particular time, our contract had expired with Motown, and we pretty much wanted to write our own music at that particular time to just let people know where we were coming from. But Epic signed us, and we had a great career with Epic, you know. You know, Michael had a great solo career with Epic, and we had a great career with the brothers with Epic. We recorded something like maybe 7 albums with Epic, you know, and they were great records, working with Gamble and Huff and different people like that, you know, and great music. We had a great, great time with those guys. Epic treated us like family too as well. Thank them for that, you know.
Yeah, I think sometimes people think of those early hits, but you look at the victory years, which is the next section in the book, and 6 of you on tour, being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Thriller, as you mentioned. As big as the 70s were, this is a really high point commercially for you guys.
Yes, being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is something that I think every artist just want to achieve, you know, over their extent of their career, and we were able to... achieve that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and being inducted to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was something as youngsters as we did at a particular time. It was so exciting to us. And still today, I look at the trophy every day on my shelf, you know. And I'm so happy that we're inducted to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's amazing.
Of all the professional honors, commercial, critical, would you say that's the high point of your entire career? Getting that induction?
I think that at the end of the day, I think every artist would want to be inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think so. Yeah, I think that's a high point of our career to me. I think so, yeah.
You mentioned Michael, Jackie. Did you sense any change in him over the years as he became the world's biggest solo star? I know he said in certain interviews he was lonely. Fame isn't always what you think it might be. What was that like for him from what you saw, just being his brother?
Well, you know, I always look at Michael as a brother. You know, other people look at him as the great superstar. We look at him as just our brother. And I knew Michael had that kind of talent to do what he was going to do. We all know that. We knew that. He always had that in him because he worked so hard with his career every single day. I mean, every single day he was always dancing and writing, and he was pretty much never took a break. You know, he just loved it that much. He loved the business. He loved the pageantry of it. He loved the glitz and the lights and the glamour. He loved entertainment. I mean, he could sleep in. He just loved it so much, and I knew that he was going to do that. You know, because he was right on his bedroom in his bedroom mirror in his bedroom. Right, I'm gonna sell over 10 million records.
Yeah.
He wrote that on his mirror in his bedroom, and he would look at that every morning. You washing your face, and you look at that every morning, and you work toward that goal every morning. You can't achieve that, and that's what he did. He wrote it on his mirror in his bathroom.
At what age did he do that, Jackie?
He did that. He did that right. He did that right. I think it was when he was off the wall. Off the wall, he did a Off the Wall era in that time. That's when he did that.
So before Thriller, yeah.
He'd take a grease pencil and write that on his mirror. I would sell these many records. I would do this. I would do that. And every day you look at that and you wash your face, you're looking at that, and you work toward that goal. That's what he would do.
Yeah, you call him a genius in the book. You say he just some people have it, very few people have it, whatever it is. You say that he had it, and you say not a day goes by you don't think of him. His spirit is still with you. So he's still always a part of you. As again, not just the world superstar, but again, just your brother.
Yes, I look at that. I'm curious, sir. You know, today I was because I'm in Las Vegas, and I went on I'm strip early this morning. And every time I go on the strip, there's this big bus always comes right beside me every time. It's the picture of Michael plastered all over the whole bus. It's his face on the bus. And every time I go to Las Vegas, I stop at a stoplight. He's there right beside my side saying, Jackie, I see you. It happens every time. It's a bus. I see him every time. Every time. Every time I go into Vegas, I see him every time. It's like he wants me to see him. I see it every time.
I definitely realize, you know, it wasn't a surprise, but how much the family loves each other, you know, that's apparent in my interviews, and it's apparent right now that that this is a family filled with love.
Right now he's playing where I am. I'm at a he's playing over. I Want Your Back is playing right now over the radio right now.
Really,
really.
Yeah, right in the background, he's playing right now. Yeah.
That happens to me every day when I go to lunch at a certain restaurant around the corner from my house. I Want You Back. I hear it every single day while I'm having my lunch.
I'm at a restaurant right now, a private restaurant. And it's playing right now in the background right now.
Right. No accidents, huh?
Yeah.
That's great.
No, thank you so much for sharing these memories, Jackie. I think that's kind of what we're saying, that you know, you guys, everyone just knows your music, but at the heart of it all, it's, as you've been saying, it's a family. It's a family that grew up in a small house just making music, just a one house of love that now everyone knows.
Yeah, we had great, wonderful fans around the world who supported us. We took the music and grasped the music and just loved it and supported us along the way, because we wouldn't be here without them. They're still there today. They still come out to see us and sing the songs and hold up signs and everything. And they're still with us, and I thank them for that. We owe it to them.
Right.
And as part of that legacy that you guys have, do you ever see some of these tribute bands who come around? I know there's one that went around pretty viral recently of recreating one of the early talent shows that you guys have. When you see that, what does that make you think, you know, that people are not only listening to your music, but recreating your act, you know, trying to literally follow in those footsteps?
Well, these bands come up to us all the time, you know, and matter of fact, you know, you won't believe this, Guns N' Roses guitar player, what's his name? I can't think of it.
Slash?
Flash. Flash came up to me and told me, he said, Jackie, I want you to know, the reason why I'm playing guitar because it's Jermaine. I said, get out of here. He said, no. I'm playing guitar because it's your brother Jermaine. I learned the bass first, and then I went to the guitar. The reason why I'm playing this music is because of you guys. Flash told me that.
Wow.
People come to tell us that all the time. Yeah.
So now we're learning too that the Jackson 5, Jermaine, are kind of responsible for one of the all-time rock guitarists.
Yeah, legends influencing legends, literally.
And all the boy bands in the past, and NSYNC and One Direction, and they've all told me they're in the business because of us. They all told me that. So I love hearing that they enjoy the music, you know, and I love hearing that.
Yeah. Right, even NSYNC's first hit, Want You Back, it doesn't get any more obvious than that, as a tribute to you guys. What are family celebrations now like with all these new generations now with other children? It's a huge family at this point. Just more love overall for everybody all around.
It's so much fun. So much food. We have so much food laying around, and the chefs cook so much food, and the whole family singing and playing sports and watching sports. It's just a wonderful feeling to have. Everybody, because everybody's scattered sometimes, you know, doing their own craft and doing things. When we come together, it is so much fun. We have a great time. Yeah. The whole family's there. Everyone's there. Yeah.
And with Janet busy touring, do you get to see Janet a lot? What?
Well, she's touring right now, and we saw her some of her shows when she came to Las Vegas, and also when she came to Los Angeles, family saw her, and she got a great show out there right now, and she's throwing down out there. She did a wonderful job. Yeah. Yeah.
What was she saying about the band when you guys were having your you know, in the '80s, she was young, '70s, '80s, but was she ever, what was her take on the Jackson 5 back then?
Yeah. Did you guys cross a lot? Did you see a lot of her when she, you know, she's younger than you guys, when you were all on the road traveling and things like that?
Yes, we did. But she was a little baby girl at the time, and she was with my mom a lot. We were doing the traveling and touring on a particular time. But she would come out herself, and as you know, she became an artist herself. She was pretty much watching everything we were doing, and she learned from us and what to do, what not to do, she's having a great career herself, you know, over these years, you know.
Did that kind of surprise you guys when you saw Janet starting to make her own musical inroads? Were you
coming? No, not at all. Not at all. We knew she had it in her. We all knew it. Yeah. We just wondered when it was going to break, you know, mm-hmm. And it did, you know, with the help of John McClain and all the people over at A&M Records at that particular time, yeah.
You talk about family, Jackie, twin boys now, that'll keep you active, right?
Yeah, three, almost four, to be four New Year's Eve, and they are, they know every song, every musical song, they know everything about the Jacksons, they know about their uncle, everything. They've seen us on stage before, and just they love the music business. I pretty much don't want them in it. I want them playing sports or playing tennis or doing something like that. But if they want to be in, I can't stop them. You know, something you know, you just have to give them that support. You know, that's what you have to do.
Maybe Jackson 2.0 coming through.
Yeah.
I'll give you that one for like free. That, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
sounds good, huh?
And Jackie, you mentioned this year's UK tour. 50-something years later, you guys are still performing for fans. Do you have a different kind of appreciation for it now, or is it just kind of like your kids again? You're just playing music because you love it.
No, we really love doing it. It's amazing. And plus, on top of that, you know, it's we have a high-energy show on stage, and it's great exercise for me. I love it. It's like going to the gym, but you get paid for it, too, at the same time. It's something we love to do. We love to hear the audience sing the songs. And sometimes I forget the lyrics. I just hold the mic out there, and the audience sing it for me, you know, refreshing my memory.
Benefit of having hits. You can just let the audience sing
them. Yeah. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. Entertainment business is great. You know, if you treat it right, it's going to treat you right. You know, that's how it is.
What do you think of current music, Jack? Anything you like specifically? You still follow a lot of new music?
I love a lot of rap things out there. I love The Weeknd, Bruno Mars. I just love a lot of people out there. I love Steve Aoki, and I was with him 2 days ago, you know, at a club, him and I hanging out, you know. And he's a good friend of mine. Matter of fact, he lives in Vegas right near me. And Celine Dion is across the street from me, two doors down, and we all hang out sometimes. We have fun and talk about the business. We have great times.
Now,
you know?
Imagine you go down to Starbucks and see Jackie Jackson, Steve Aoki, Celine Dion just having lattes in the corner or something.
So we all hang out a lot.
Yeah. That's great.
We have a great time. We really do in the neighborhood. Yeah.
I think we can tell just from talking with you, Jackie, how you and the Jacksons would want to be remembered. What, you know, the book is called Legacy. How do you see the legacy of this music you've been giving to people around the world for 50 years and a little bit more now?
I hope people just remember us as a group who we do try to make people happy around the world through our music, love of our music. And that's what we try to do. We try to give music and make people happy and smile. That's all you can do. So if we can make people happy and make them smile through music and make them dance and celebrate, you know, that means we've done it. You know, that's to me. And like I told you before, we couldn't have done it without the fans, because they've been so supportive over the years. And Well, we know how this career, this music industry, you have your ups and downs. It's like a roller coaster ride sometimes. But, you know, those fans that have always been there with us from day one and get to give that more support, and I thank them for that.
Well, thank you, Jackie, for sharing your stories, both in the book and just here with us today. It just, we can hear the love that you guys that you have. It sounds like as a family. So really, really appreciate you sharing that with us and people listening to the podcast. And Fred, thank you for sharing the story as well. People around the world who have been fans for so long of the band. This is about as complete a book, or really just a complete look at any act. This is an incredible book that you put together, Fred. So congratulations to you for your work and how you did this.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks so much. Fred did a wonderful job, a fantastic job.
Well, I loved doing it, and, you know, loved working with you and your brothers. It was just a real pleasure to work on this book.
It's pretty much a masterpiece that we have for the rest of our lives. And our grandchildren will be able to look at this book in years and look through it and see what their uncles and aunts did, you know, on stage, which is something that Fred put together. And it's a great book. It's a masterpiece, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you, Jackie.
Fred, thank you as always, Jackie. An absolute honor. Really, really appreciate you chatting with us today. So nice to hear all this from you. Just a real honor for both of us to chat with you today.
We do really appreciate your time for this and taking so long to talk to us, really.
Thank you very much, guys. I need to do just something to get closer to your soul. And you do know that I want you to dance and shout. Shake your body down to the ground. Dance and shout. Shake your body down to the ground. Dance and shout. Shake your body down to the ground.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.